Welcome to the Heart of a Friend. I'm Andy Wiegand, and this is episode 41, a continuation of the last episode, Seven Habits of Highly Effective Listeners. We covered the first three habits in the last episode. We'll cover the last four in this one. You know, no one would argue nowadays that we have a shortage of good talkers, but the premise of this series is that there's a shortage of good listeners. This asymmetry is a big problem. We're more isolated, lonely, and divided than ever. Part of the solution, at least on a personal level, is to take simple steps toward becoming better listeners. I've talked about the importance of curiosity, using questions to keep the focus on the other person, staying mentally engaged, and resisting the temptation to give advice. Listening well isn't hard, but it does take some determination to develop these new habits. We'll look at four more in this episode, and I hope this time will remind us that we can do better, that we're destined for more than what we've become. So listening well means to pay careful attention to what's being said in a way that encourages people to continue to share even more of their story. Listening well is one of the greatest gifts we can give to one another. Being heard is so close to being loved that for most of us, they're almost indistinguishable. Here's more for our How to Do It checklist. The fourth habit of highly effective listeners: don't use your own stories to compete with others. This happens all the time. Someone starts sharing a story. Maybe it's about a health problem, the loss of a loved one, an athletic accomplishment, a job problem, a family issue, you name it. Before they get through to the end, before they get to share their own feelings about the experience, before they get to unpack the implications, before we ask any clarifying or follow-up questions, we jump in with a related story of our own. Whether or not we intend it, our story competes with theirs. We may think we're being helpful or encouraging or showing how we understand and can relate, but it almost always has an unintended and unfortunate effect. Instead of supporting their story, we've executed a shift response. The conversation has shifted its focus from the original storyteller to us, and we've robbed the other person of the opportunity to process more of what they're thinking and feeling. Whether we intend to or not, we send the message that it's more important for us to talk about ourselves than it is for us to listen to them. In the end, it doesn't honor the speaker or what's been said. I was at a sports event recently. There was a guy sitting by himself, and he had one of those big, bulky immobilization boots on his lower leg. He was using a scooter to get around. I was by myself, so I walked over and sat down beside him and asked about, you know, what had happened to his leg. He began to tell me all about his Achilles tendon problem. Since I've also had an injury to my Achilles and have worn a boot just like his and used a scooter just like his, it would have been very easy for me to begin to share about my own experience at several different points in the conversation. You know, I had the very same thing happen to me, or something like that, but that would have been a shift response. I would have been sending the message that it was more important for me to talk about myself than for me to listen to him. I resisted the temptation this time. I decided not to rob him of a story. He wanted to talk, so I encouraged him to keep going. I decided not to use my own story to compete with his. Here's the way Celeste Headlee put it in her TED Talk, 10 Ways to Have a Better Conversation. Quote, "Don't equate your experience with theirs. If they're talking about having lost a family member, don't start talking about the time you lost a family member. If they're talking about the trouble they're having at work, don't tell them about how much you hate your job. It's not the same. It's never the same. All experiences are individual. And more importantly, it's not about you. You don't need to take that moment to prove how amazing you are or how much you've suffered. End quote. Kate Murphy, in her book, You're Not Listening and Why It Matters, shares a story about the late Dick Bass. Quote, he was the son of a Texas oil baron. He was known for going on ambitious mountain climbing expeditions and talking about them at length to anyone within earshot, including the poor man who happened to be seated next to him on an airplane. For the duration of the cross-country flight, Bass went on about the treacherous peaks of McKinley and Everest, and about the time he almost died in the Himalayas and his plan to climb Everest again. As they were about to land, Bass realized he hadn't properly introduced himself. "That's okay," the man said, extending his hand. "I'm Neil Armstrong. Nice to meet you." End quote. Just in case you're not up to speed on your astronaut history, Neil Armstrong was the first man to walk on the moon. Dick Bass had no idea. He was too busy talking about himself. Now, Murphy tells this story to emphasize her point that if we don't listen, we're likely to miss out on some pretty amazing stuff. Well, no argument with that, but there's another point to this story that impresses me even more. Neil Armstrong's silence. The man who walked on the moon apparently also had the discipline to patiently listen to another man's story without interrupting, without succumbing to the temptation to blow Dick Bass out of the water with his out-of-this-world story. But for Armstrong, it wasn't a competition. Effective listeners know this. We may be a Neil Armstrong in our field. We may have show-stopping stories that rival walking on the moon. We may have a story that's out of this world. But when someone else is sharing their story, we owe them the respect of our full attention. In that moment, they are center stage. They're in the limelight. They're the star of the conversation. Don't try and steal the show with a story of your own. Don't shift the focus of the conversation to yourself. Instead, honor them, honor their story. Encourage them to share the full measure of what they went through. This is one very important way we can serve one another. Highly effective listeners do not use their own stories to compete with others. Let me add a footnote to this point. I'm not saying our own story wouldn't be helpful to another person. On the contrary, hearing about our own grief or loss, our own illness or suffering, our own life experiences can be very encouraging and instructive to others. It's important to share these stories with each other, but too often we interrupt, we jump in before the other person gets to the end. Before they can even process what they need to say, before you can sit together and reflect on what they're going through, we're too quick to share our story. Timing is everything. So when in doubt about whether to share a similar story, it's probably best just to bite our tongues. Err on the side of waiting. Highly effective listeners don't use their own stories to compete with others. Well, the fifth habit of highly effective listeners is maintain good eye contact. Our eyes say a lot. If we're speaking and the person we're talking with is looking away, if their eyes are focused somewhere else, reading a book, a newspaper, looking at their smartphone, or darting around to look at something in the background, it's dispiriting. It communicates that, well, I'd rather be doing something else, or I'd rather be somewhere else. It communicates that the one speaking is not that important. It undermines the conversation. Here's an insight about this from another culture. The most common greeting among the tribes of northern Natal in South Africa, equivalent to hello in English, is Sawubona. The expression means, I see you. The usual reply is Sikona, which means, I'm here. In the Ubuntu ethic of sub-Sahara Africa, to see someone is to affirm their existence. Not to see them implies they don't exist at all. So fundamentally, in any culture, when we fail to look at someone with our eyes, people read between the lines. You don't need to be from South Africa. When we don't look at people, we're sending the message that they don't exist, at least in a way that's important to our personal world. Good eye contact is therefore really a prerequisite to good communication and a good relationship in any culture. The importance of maintaining good eye contact in conversation can't be overstated. If you don't look at me, I, for one, won't be sharing the secrets of my heart with you. I once heard Bob Woodward, the Washington, D.C. journalist of Watergate fame, speaking at an author's event. He's interviewed a number of presidents since the Nixon era. He shared about his interactions with Bill Clinton. He couldn't figure out what made Clinton such a magnetic and persuasive political figure. And, well, regardless of what you may think of his politics or personal life, Clinton had extraordinary charm and charisma. Well, Woodward's breakthrough moment of insight came in one of his interviews with him. Clinton was finishing a glass of Coca-Cola while they were talking. While lifting the glass to finish the last of the Coke, Woodward could see Clinton with his eyes open, looking at him through the bottom of the glass. Clinton never lost eye contact, and Woodward suddenly realized that this was at least part of the secret of his appeal. Clinton was relentless in maintaining good eye contact with other people. Our eyes say a lot. Highly effective listeners maintain good eye contact. Well, the next habit is in the same ballpark as this. It's not just about our eyes. It's about all the other nonverbal messages we send. And I'll be back in just a few moments to talk about it. The sixth habit of highly effective listeners is pay attention to your own nonverbal messages. Nonverbal communication has been studied extensively. Almost all studies agree that 70 to 90% of all communication is nonverbal. We say more with our eyes, our facial expressions, our hands, and our posture than we ever say with our words. In the last episode, I mentioned my college roommate, Bobby Fong, who was a world-class listener. One of my lasting memories of Bobby listening has to do with his facial expressions and body language. With his face, he could convey surprise, sincerity, concern, amusement, skepticism, puzzlement, and sadness, a wide range of emotions. And I remember when he was seated, how he would often lean forward, elbows on his knees, listening intently. In other words, Bobby communicated a lot nonverbally. He demonstrated in a variety of ways that he was paying attention. He was engaged, and it made you feel important, that he was taking you seriously. It made you feel like you could trust him. It made you feel like you could be open and vulnerable. I don't know if Bobby did these things intentionally or if they were second nature to him, but his body language and facial expressions made a huge difference. Honestly, if I'm talking with somebody and, for example, they're looking at me with a deadpan expression, or they keep their arms crossed over their chest, or they're looking at me out of the corner of their eye, or worse, they're looking at their phone or TV, or otherwise they're trying to multitask, I'm likely to be discouraged from taking any risks in the conversation. The signals they're sending me communicate disinterest and indifference. On the other hand, if someone's leaning in, facing me, nodding or tilting their head, using their facial expressions to show they're tracking with what I'm saying, I'm likely to want to go on sharing my story. The nonverbal signals they're sending are positive. They encourage me to open up the drawers, so to speak, and share some of the treasured pieces of my life. So nonverbal signals are huge factors in conversation and in building deeper relationships. And highly effective listeners pay attention to them. A telephone crisis volunteer was on duty one evening, and this individual happened to be watching TV when the phone rang. Well, the woman was dealing with serious depression and needed to talk, but the volunteer kept the TV on. After a few minutes, the woman, hearing the TV in the background, asked if he was watching TV. "The TV is on," he admitted. But she pressed the point. "Are you watching it?" Hesitating, he admitted he was. And without saying another word, the caller hung up. Highly effective listeners not only pay attention to their body language and facial expressions, but they also pay attention to their environment. That's because the environment can make it easy or difficult to send the appropriate nonverbal messages. For instance, sitting in a sports bar talking with someone is a minefield of distractions. With TV showing multiple games, sports, and news headlines, and attention-getting commercials, it takes heroic effort to fully concentrate on the conversation. Let's face it, some environments are more conducive to sending better nonverbal signals. For serious conversations, highly effective listeners will prefer quieter, less distracting settings. It's far easier to be engaged and send the appropriate nonverbal messages. The seventh habit of highly effective listeners: value periods of silence. Sometimes silence is golden. A lot can be happening under the surface in the quiet pauses of a conversation. For instance, I'm a slow processor. If someone asks me a question, I might need a minute to think about how I want to answer in a thoughtful way. And when someone asks, for instance, how's retirement, I might want to think for a few moments before responding. But not infrequently, the person asking that kind of question, uncomfortable with the pause and trying to be helpful, will supply their own answer. "Oh, I bet you're as busy as ever." And 9 times out of 10, I'll just go with that, just because it's easier. But that's not what I would have said had they given me more time. Do you see how filling the silence can short-circuit the processing the speaker needs and wants to do? It also stunts the ability of the conversation and the relationship to go deeper. Here's how Kate Murphy puts it, quote, "To be a good listener is to accept pauses and silences, because filling them too soon prevents the speaker from communicating what they're perhaps struggling to say. It quashes elaboration and prevents real issues from coming to the surface. Just wait. Give the other person a chance to pick up where they left off." End quote. Highly effective listeners are not embarrassed by silences. They don't feel the need to fill the vacuum with their own words. They know that the lull in the conversation may only be the speaker trying to collect their thoughts. In the next episode, I'll be talking about the story of Job from the Bible. And Job's friends who came to comfort him did everything right for the first 7 days. They sat in silence. They only got into trouble when they started talking, when they felt the need to fill the vacuum with their own words. Now, sometimes we try to fill the vacuum with words because we don't want others to think we have nothing to say, or we don't know what to say. But it's perfectly all right if you don't know what to say. We don't need to be afraid of not having a quick reply. Unfortunately, many of us are preoccupied with this. Stephen Covey said it frankly, quote, "Most of us don't listen with the intent to understand. We listen with the intent to reply," end quote. This is deadly. It keeps us from being fully engaged with what the other person is saying. Kate Murphy also addresses this. She reassures us that a pause following someone's comments can actually be a sign of attentiveness. A tilt of the head, a nod, a murmur, a thoughtful facial expression all let the other person know you are attentive and continuing to track with what they're saying. They will be encouraged to continue their story. And at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with simply admitting you don't know what to say. Better to be speechless, but authentic, than fill the void with meaningless words. Did you know that the words listen and silent are made of the same six letters? Highly effective listeners value periods of silence. Of course, there are a number of other practices or habits that could be added to this list. I've only given you seven of them. Most of them you'll do if you're following your curiosity and paying attention. But just in case, this is a helpful checklist. So how are you doing as a listener? To how many of these can you say yes? Let's review. 1, I keep the focus of the conversation on the other person. 2, I stay mentally engaged. 3, I'm cautious about giving advice. 4, I don't use my own story to compete with others. 5, I maintain good eye contact. 6, I pay attention to my own nonverbal messages. And 7, I value periods of silence. Well, how did you do? Of course, nobody bats 1,000. But if you can say yes to most of these, most of the time, you're well on your way to becoming a world-class listener, believe me. The soft power of listening can become a superpower for you. It's why God gave us only one mouth but two ears. Using them well is part of fulfilling our destiny. And this is inarguably one of our most important life skills. In the next episodes, we'll see how important listening can be in helping those who are hurting, how listening is crucial in resolving conflicts and as a persuasive strategy. We'll look at how it can make a huge difference, more specifically in marriage, work, leadership, and friendships. And finally, what are 6 of the reasons that we don't listen well and what to do about it? So please subscribe so you don't miss the next episodes. I hope this one has been helpful to you and a reminder that we're all destined for more than what we've become. This is From the Heart of a Friend.